Yes, so when did you come into social work?
I came into social work in 1924 through a couple of friends, one of whom was then a care committee organiser in Stepney. Mm. And I went as a voluntary worker in 1924 and used to do care committee visiting in Stepney in the appalling slum conditions of those days. Of course, it was very much better than it had been in the Barnett's day, but it was still pretty awful. The rotting wooden staircases, the smell, the cookers on the landing for several different families, and the old barrack-like tenement blocks, for instance, college buildings in Wentworth Street off Commercial Street, which I knew very well subsequently, which had been built as part of the Toynbee Hall complex originally for extra residents of Toynbee. They were single rooms with all the plumbing on the half landing for the whole landing of rooms. And when I knew it, families were living in those rooms, sometimes in single rooms. There was considerable homework, of course, and quite an amount of unemployment, but nothing like the casual labour that there was in Bermondsey. I went to Bermondsey to live in a settlement in 1925, early in 1925, and there there was the perpetual casual dock labour. And again, not only poverty, but the uncertainty, the wives never knowing whether their husbands were coming back with any money in their pockets or not. And they had to try to plan things so that whatever did come in lasted throughout the week. There was a good deal of drunkenness, particularly on Friday nights, because, as the old saying goes, drink was the shortest way out of Manchester. A good deal of child death in care committee visiting, which I did both in Stepney and Bermondsey. When you are getting particulars of the family, you would automatically say, how many children? And then the next question would be, and how many living? Yes. It was assumed that that several would not be living. The strain on the women, of course, was simply tremendous. But there was that enormous vitality, both in Stepney and in Bermondsey, excepting of the really downtrodden, hopeless. Well, there I was in that settlement, as what the club members called the peel round the onion. I remember one day.
Why did they call it?
What peel round the onion. Well, because that is the least possible thing you can be.
Yes, I see. Yes.
And I remember one day a group of us were on a bus, and they said to the bus conductor, pointing to me, her dad's mum ain't born yet. They had these lovely, brilliant sayings. The work conditions were very bad too, except in Peak Freen's factory in Bermondsey set the standard.
Yes.
For the whole neighbourhood. If you were really lucky, you worked in Peak Freen. Wages in those days were somewhere between £1 and 25 shillings a week.
Yeah.
One club member, who is still an old friend, was the absolute plutocrat of all. She had been apprenticed. She was a member of Nat Soper, and she went up to the city and earned £2.10 a week.
Yes.
And yes. That was absolute luxury in those days. It became pretty obvious in Bermondsey and from the Stepney experience that I needed to train, as training was known in those days. And I went to LSE in 1926. I used regularly to work in various agencies like the Stepney COS in the long vacations. When, do you want me to say anything about being a student at LSE?
Yes, please. But before we do come on to that, I'd like to ask, come back to something you were saying earlier. I mean, you explained when you came into social work and you said a friend. Did you say a friend?
Two friends.
Two friends. I wonder if you'd say something about then, the sort of how, a bit more about how you got into it and why you got into it. Because I think I'm right in saying that your father was a member of the Indian Civil Service. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So I wonder if you could...
Well, his being a member of the ICS didn't have anything to do with my coming into social work. We were living at Westrum at the time. I had nothing to do and was getting extremely bored. And a friend of mine introduced me to a friend of hers, Edith Ramsay, R-A-M-S-A-Y, who was a care committee organizer in Stepney. And Edith Ramsay recruited me as a volunteer. So that was how it happened.
Yes. But how did she arouse your interest in it, though? Was it just because you wanted something to do with your time?
Well, very much because I wanted something to do. Because this sounded much more interesting than any possible alternative. She was a very vivid person, and she enthused me with the whole idea of, I suppose, of work in slum conditions, trying to make things better in slum conditions.
Talking about a sort of philosophical commitment.
Yeah, yes, now, I suppose we are.
Where did that come from? And was that something you already had, you'd arrived at through reading, or sorted it out in your head? Or?
I suppose I'd arrived at it through... Now, I'm pausing now because I'm thinking of the whole atmosphere of the time. As frequently happens about major catastrophes like war, there was a very strong spirit of idealism in the years after the First World War, as indeed there was after the Second World War. The League of Nations, refugees from Austria, peace in our time, all the terrible number of returned wounded, disabled soldiers. So it was a whole spirit of Reconstruction. After all, remember there was a Ministry of Reconstruction after the First World War. So it was that whole spirit of rebuilding that I think was, well, I know it was in the atmosphere, and I suppose I caught it.
I see, yeah, fine. So your friend Elizabeth Ramsay?
No, Edith.
Edith Ramsay. Interested you in the care committee work, and from there you went to the Bermondsey settlement.
Yeah, not the Bermondsey settlement, no. The Princess Club, settlement in Bermondsey. Yes. Yeah, the Bermondsey settlement is different.
I see. I didn't realise there were two settlements. The Bermondsey settlement was a university settlement.
No, there was no university settlement in Bermondsey. The Bermondsey settlement was a Wesleyan settlement. Then there was Time and Talent settlement. Yes. And there was Princess Club settlement. all within a quite small distance of each other in the parts of Bermondsey which are near the docks.
Who set up the settlement you worked?
Princess Club. Yes. It was named after Princess Louise. I can't now remember how the money had been collected, or there was some particular reason why it was named after her, but I've forgotten what the reason was. It primarily ran a whole variety of clubs and play centres and a residential hostel.
I see.
And we did care committee work in the daytime.
I see. So, I mean, to work in a settlement was more than a sort of 9-to-5 type commitment.
Oh, heavens, yes, we were resident.
Yes, and...
settlement workers aren't resident nowadays. Yes, yes, we were resident. Yes, it was no 9-to-5. It was 9-to-10, so to speak.
Yes. And then you say 1926, you thought?
1926 I went to LSE, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Hoping to learn a good deal more about social conditions.
Yes. Can you say something about that course in 1920? What sort of subject? What was the curriculum and what sort of things did students discuss in seminars?
Well, there weren't seminars in the sense that there are at the present day. We didn't even know the word. There were classes, weekly classes, with a tutor for which you prepared a paper, a student prepared a paper and read it to the class, and then there was discussion on the paper. No, the discussion was much more after lectures. Most lectures, as far as I remember, there was a period for discussion after the lecture, which really wasn't a very good arrangement, because I think it had been the real to and fro of discussions is more apt to be nowadays during the lecture. It would have been much better, but that was unknown at the time. It was after the lecture. I remember, for example, after Professor Hobhouse's lecture, there used to be nearly an hour for discussion, and we used to sit in embarrassed silence, and every now and then somebody would ask a fatuous question, but there wasn't real discussion. I think the material was too complex, too rich for students to be able to take hold of in that way. Well, marvellous teachers, of course, in those days. Hobhouse, Ginsberg, Lasky, Malinowski, Westermark. Westermark, by the by, is spelled W-E-S-T-E-R-M-A-R-C-K. Eileen Power, Tom Marshall, Bernard Hart, H-A-R-T, and so on.
Yes.
So it was immensely stimulating.
A real galaxy of stars.
Absolute galaxy of talent, yes. Yes. I repeated all the lectures more than 1 year because I enjoyed them so much.
Yes. You went twice?
I went twice, yes.
Yes.
Yes, I think there's some individual lectures 3 times. Oh yes, I've forgotten Dalton, Hugh Dalton.
Yes.
And of course Robbins, R-O-B-B-I-N-S.
Professor Robbins, the economist. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yes, he was a new young assistant lecturer in my day.
When you mentioned Tom Marshall, is that Professor T.H.
Marshall? Yes, Professor T.H. Marshall, yeah. Who was an extremely good lecturer. He lectured on economic and social history. He had a beautiful voice which made a great difference.
Yes. And was that the lecturing there at that time?
No. I had Attlee's room when I first became a tutor at LSE. And I'm afraid I used sometimes to write to my friends on the remaining house of common stationery. But no, Attlee had left before I got there.
Yes. So when you talked about the practical work you did during the long vacation, was that something you had to arrange for yourself?
It was something which had nothing to do with LSE. There was practically no practical work at LSE in those days. Oh, by the way, I forgot to mention that that I got polio in the summer between my first and second year at LSE. So I missed. Oh, I'm pausing, as it wasn't between the first and the second year. Yes, it was, but it doesn't matter. Anyway, I did miss part of the term, and I was excused practical work, excepting for 1 month, with a probation officer in Shoreditch, at the juvenile court where Clark Hall was chairman.
Yes.
And that was another side of poverty.
Yes. Can I just come back to the practical work? was there any lectures on the course which dealt with techniques of helping?
Absolutely none. Mm. This is my big quarrel with that whole period. Mm. When you talk about training for social work in that period, in the universities there was no such thing.
Mm.
It was these splendid social science courses.
Yes.
Oh, I'm talking now about LSE. I don't know directly what was happening in the other university social studies or social sciences departments. But at any rate, at LSE, it was a splendid teaching about social history, social policy, social philosophy, in pretty broad terms, social psychology, a little bit of anthropology.
Mm-hmm.
But from the mid-1930 onwards, first-class criminology from Herman Mannheim.
Yes, yes.
But absolutely nothing that linked all that to the kind of level at which social workers would be working.
Mm, mm,
mm. Of course, there were the social surveys of the period.
Yes, yes.
But there was really nothing that was relevant to the day-to-day practice of social workers.
Yes. Was that something that struck you at the time as you were doing the course?
Yes. Oh, yes. And later on too. Yes, indeed it did. And I went to LSE hoping that those two would be brought together.
Yes.
But they were not until long afterwards.
So. So, after
1929, I ceased to be a student.
Yes. So you were a student from 26 to 29, losing, and you lost time because you were ill.
I lost half a term because I was ill. Yes. Well, I can't offhand remember whether it was the very beginning or midway, but anyway, yes. I did lose half a term.
So by the beginning of our period, you'd had experience in the care committee, in settlement.
That's right.
A practical work placement in probation.
That's it.
And you'd done the social science course at LSE.
I'd got the London University Diploma in Sociology. Which was a considerably higher standard than the certificate.
I see, yes. Did you have to be a graduate to do that course?
No. Well, the assumption was that you were, but you didn't have to be.
I see, yes. So then what happened, now we come to the beginning of our period, 29.
What happened then was that LSE asked me to go back as a tutor in the social science department.
I see.
Which I did.
Yes. So,
and I was there from 29 to 39.
Yes. Now that sounds like you're being a bit modest now about what happened to you as a student. You must have been a pretty good student to be invited to go back.
Well, I suppose they got used to me by that time. I got distinction in the diploma, yes.
Hmm.
C.S. Lloyd, who was head of the department, said that they gave me a distinction as the benefit of the doubt because they couldn't read my handwriting.
Yes.
So, I went back, that was the year when the mental health course was started.
Yes.
It was suggested to me that I should apply to take the mental health course.
Yes.
But, for several reasons, I didn't.
Yes.
So I've never been a kosher social worker.
Yes. 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 Why did, was that a personal decision not to take the course?
Yes. My mother wasn't at all well, and we lived at Weston, as I said.
Yes.
And it meant working on Saturdays, so I wouldn't have been able to go home for other than very short weekends.
Students worked on Saturdays
those
days?
Yes, and in the first mental health course, indeed they did, in the clinics. And then anything else, we'd stay on as a tutor. So that was that. Mm.
Yes.
I remember talking to a friend about it at the time and saying how wonderful it was, but I was going to get paid to read all the books that I wanted to read anyway.
Mm. Yes, yes. And were you surprised at how involved you got? How involved you got in all intellectually? Because I remember at the very beginning you said, well, you were bored, you didn't know what to do with your time out at Westrum, and a friend suggested the care committee. Now here you are, 1929.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Absolutely immersed in it.
Absolutely immersed in it, because, well, the whole excitement of the subjects that we were studying at LSE.
Yes,
I took to that like a duck to water.
And I suppose in that senior common room, you had access to all those people you've mentioned as being stimulating lectures, you know.
Yes, yes, I hadn't thought of that, but I suppose we did.
Mm.
Yes, not that I remember very much of the conversations. What I always have remembered, Professor Wolf, who was Professor of Logic, we sat next to each other one day at tea in the senior common room, and I've never forgotten, he said, remember, you will never really have understood any theory until you put yourselves in the shoes of the people who advanced that theory, until you've got inside it from their point of view, and it's only when you've done that that you can presume to criticize it.
Yes.
I often wish students would remember that.
Yes.
At the present day, or at any time. But then, of course, students rather naturally at their ages want black and white.
Yes.
And of course, there was a lot of black and white at LSE. I mean, we certainly knew what was white and what was black.
Did you?
Oh, indeed, we did.
What was white and what was black at
that time? Well, LSE, of course, was white.
Yes.
Lasky, of course, was much more, in a way, of a crusader than most of the others.
Mm.
Well, there were an increasing number of blacks, of course, from 1933 onwards.
Yes.
And there was all the idealism about disarmament and the refusal to believe that rearmament would come. However, that was later, of course.
Yes. Did those sort of issues impinge on the social work courses? And
they weren't social work courses, they were social science courses.
Or social science courses.
Oh, yes.
Mm.
All the endless discussions that students used to have.
Yes.
Mm. Yes, indeed they did. Mm. And, of course, industrial relations and trade unionism.
Yes.
I was in Bermondsey at the time of the general strike, and of course there we were entirely on the side of the strikers.
Mm.
It was a terrible period when wages were being steadily reduced,
so
the standard of living was going steadily down. It was a period when the unemployment insurance allowance for was 3 shillings a week for the first child and 2 shillings for subsequent children.
Yes.
Well, even in those days, to feed a child on 2 shillings a week was practically not possible.
Yes. I wonder if we could sort of talk a bit more about the, I suppose, the competing ideas which were around at that time, and sort of who thought what, and sort of what the debates were about, who were the protagonists. I wonder if you can recall any of the issues that tutors or students were involved in, say about the organisation of, well, I suppose the poor law it would have been at that time, would it not?
Well, of course, we were obviously anti-poor law, with all that web influence in LSE. We read the minority report. I strongly suspect we did not read the majority report. I don't think in those days we realised the weaknesses of Beatrice Webb's logical division, specialisations. We didn't, I think, looking back, I realise how this was breaking up human beings into health, education, unemployment, and all the rest of it.
Yes.
I remember when I was leaving NSE in 1926, I went to see Beatrice Webb to discuss with her what I should do. And her enthusiastic advice was to become a woman relieving officer. She was very rightly, I think, trying to get the poor law change from inside. Of course, there's an enormous difference in individual ROs and their whole attitude in the supplementary benefits, SBC. I think she was trying to get in more educated people, more particularly, no doubt, people who had been students at LSE.
Yes.
There was in those days a very considerable number of evening students taking primary BSc, and I remember a couple of those were relieving officers, two women relieving officers. But of course, social workers were unknown in anything excepting. Well, as far as London was concerned, care committee, voluntary organisations, and probation. That was the one big break, the beginnings of social workers coming into the public services.
Yes. And did the employers or the social workers sort of look to the social science department at LSE for, an intellectual lead?
Not to my knowledge.
No, they weren't consulting you about how they should organise their services, deploy their staff, or to arrange in-service courses for their staff.
Well, they wouldn't have got more than a purely lay answer if they had.
Yes.
That wasn't the kind of knowledge that people were after. You see, social workers were considered a very lowly breed.
Yes.
In those days. The fact that the social science department had so many students who were taking a certificate course, which of course was a college qualification, not a university qualification, that was thought to be very much to the detriment of the social science department.
Yes.
And the head of the department was only half time. C.M. Lloyd was part-time editor of the New Statesman.
I see.
Part-time head of the department.
Yes.
And the students were practically all women.
Yes.
Well, for practical purposes, were women. And women who either could pay for themselves or their family could pay for them.
Yes.
There were no grants.
Yes. I see. What did you teach actually on the?
Oh, this was another thing about the tutors. You taught every subject.
Did you?
Yeah.
Yes.
You were. Well, of course, there were strengths in this as well as its obvious weaknesses. Mm. You were the people who brought it all together.
I see. Yeah.
That provided for students the focus across the board.
Yes.
And that helped them to keep the different parts marching in harmony. Marching equally so far as the standard they were attaining.
Yes.
Was concerned. They had fortnightly tutorials, individual tutorials, and they wrote an essay for each tutorial.
Mm. I was interested in, you mentioned the webs, because one of the, one of the notions that's been going through my mind was I don't know, is there a conflict, a possibility of there being a conflict between wanting to shape social policy, which is what the Webbs were desperately trying to do, on at least two occasions I believe Beatrice Webb actually misled people on her evidence to the House of Lords on sweatshops and the survey she did on for the 1909 Poor Law. Because she was trying to make a point. I wonder whether there's a conflict between actively trying to shape social policy and promote a particular policy and being an academic theoretician and wanting to make some kind of academic contribution, which is sort of, I suppose, what one... what's your experience in that? Would you agree with that?
Well, I think the Webbs and Beveridge, who of course was the director at that time, they were atypical of the, I wasn't going to say the staff of the department, because most of the lecturers I mentioned were not on the staff of the social science department.
Yes.
And the lectures were not given especially to social science students. The Webbs and Beveridge were atypical in that they both engaged in direct research in the live situation.
Yes.
Whereas all the others I've mentioned did not. Arlene Power obviously did in historical documents.
Yes.
And of course Tawney did too in historical documents. But none of the others that I've mentioned engaged in research in the current social scene.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes.
Malinowski did, of course, but not in this country.
Mm. Can we come back to that one later on, perhaps, and sort of move on beyond 29, we're in 1929, and...
I've been moving on all this time.
Yes.
I'm not talking specifically about 1929.
No.
I'm talking about the period between the wars.
Yes. Fine, then. Well then, what changes in social work were there during that period? I mean, between 1929 and say 39, the scene must have moved a little bit.
Might a little bit. I suppose the two quite different big moves had been the beginnings of Home Office training for probation in 1936, when the Probation Advisory and Training Board was set up, and when the Home Office gave grants for both fees and maintenance for students to train for probation.
Yes.
So that was one very big change, and that began to bring a few men into the department before the war. For instance, John Spencer came in that period.
Yes.
Then the other change was the mental health course.
Yes.
But remember, the mental health course as such was encapsulated and really had no influence on what was going on in the department.
Yes.
They were a separate group of students who were alleged by the rest of us to be talking a special secret language.
Yes.
They began to talk about, you knew with a past student of your own, that by the end of the first term of the mental health course, they'd be talking about schizoid personalities.
Yes.
And that kind of thing.
Yes.
So they had very little influence on the main body of students.
Yes.
Other students, probation, the very first probation student, were supposed to be working as probation officer simultaneously with taking a social science course. And it took a little time. Yeah. I remember the first one, Joan Potter, was nearly killed on that. And also Victoria Bruce, who later became a prison governor.
Goodness.
Yes, it was goodness on that is. But anyway, that did get changed. And then they had, I've forgotten how many months at that time, as probation officers, and then by degrees, with a few lectures being added.
Mm.
And then, of course, what became known as the Rainer, R-A-I-N-E-R, house course was started. Almoners went off and did a year either at St. Thomas's Hospital or what was known as the group, which was several other London hospitals. This, as far as LSE is concerned, because it was different for other universities. It took a long time before there was any teaching at the Institute of Almoners.
I didn't realise that.
Oh yes.
So it's like as they went full circle.
Yes, Margaret Roxburgh could tell you about that.
Can I just check that I've got this right? That the training for the almoners was the coursework was based on LSE.
Mm.
Practical work was based in these London hospitals.
That's right.
Then it went to the Institute, coursework, and then it came back to LSE with the Applied Social Studies course.
That's true. Yeah. Remember that the almoner students at LSE took the 2-year or 1-year for graduate social science course before they took the hospital training.
I see.
They weren't trying to do it concurrently.
No.
They had 3 months in the COS.
Yes.
And 1 month somewhere else.
Yes.
Before the year of almoner training.
Yes.
In hospital.
Yes.
If she remembers well enough, Cherry Morris should be able to tell you about that period. They used to have seminars. Well, I'm not called seminars. Mm. Anyway, they used to have discussion groups with her in St. Thomas's. Yes.
Had you got to the stage of wanting to give a mighty great shove in the area of organisation of social services and social work training, but at this time? And when did you start sort of?
You see, I think you've got to take into account the significance of the fact that we were doing no study at all of organisational structure or professional expertise.
Mm.
So that we were thinking in terms of social reform and not thinking very much in terms of how you were going to implement it.
Yes.
We were certainly campaigning, for instance, for family allowances.
Yes.
This was one of the means of both of alleviating poverty and taking people out of the poor law.
Yes. Were you in touch with Eleanor Rathbone?
Yes. Elizabeth McAdam, of course, I knew, yes. Mm. And through her I met Eleanor Rathbone on various occasions.
Yes. And
a very single-minded, determined campaigner.
Yes. Eleanor Rathbone.
Yes. 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 Yes, with all the backup, of course, of Elizabeth McCabot.
Yes. I read Mary Stock's biography of Eleanor Rathbone recently.
Do you know, I hadn't realised she had written, did she?
Oh, about 1950s.
Did she? My gosh, I must get home with that.
Well, it is, as you say, very single-minded,
yeah,
and campaigning over a very wide range of issues as well.
Yes, she was indeed. Mm. And another thing we were campaigning about was extension of the Factories Act.
Uh-huh.
I was involved in a campaign when the 1937 bill was going through Parliament.
What was that? I know absolutely nothing about that.
You don't? Well, the Factories Act was extended, and as far as I remember, also consolidated by the 1937 Act. And a small group was set up. This was not necessarily LSE. I mean, I happen to be LSE. We called ourselves the Factories Bill Campaign. And there's a remarkable woman called Gertrude Tuckwell, with whom I had a lot to do in all that period. She was the inspiration of it. There was a previous factory inspector on it, Amisha Carroll, whom you probably came across when you were in Hampshire.
Yes.
C-A-R-R-O-L-L.
Yes.
And Rosamond Tweedy, T-W-W-E-D-I-E, who lived with Helen Waddell, who wrote a pamphlet for us. And we used to speak to whatever group who was willing to let us come and speak to them. And we did what I think was really a very useful thing. We would look at each clause in the bill, which was coming up at the committee stage in the House.
Yes.
And then we would send several days before to every member of that committee notes which said the government clause is such and such. The Factories Bill campaign suggests so and so. And we did manage to get our amendments drafted in parliamentary terms. Now, we had a lovely time on this. Whether we had any influence or not, I don't know.
Yes.
So this was the kind of thing that we were active in.
Yes.
Of course, implementation there, yes, we knew a lot about the factory inspector and its work. But I suppose I partly did because I had several friends who were factory inspectors.
Yes.
And a few LSE students did become afterwards factory inspectors.
Was that your first contact with government? I mean, the machinery of government, and is that where you learned how to influence?
I haven't thought about it. I suppose in a way it was.
Mm.
The whole contact with government departments only began during the Second World War. We had no intimate contact, such as university social studies departments, whatever name they're called by, do nowadays.
Yes. This was when LSE was in Cambridge during the war.
Well, it wasn't particularly because LSE was in Cambridge. No, it simply was a whole new...
Yes.
It was a whole new way of operating which began.
Yeah, I'm trying to locate the time. It's in during the war time period, LSE was evacuated, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. Mm-hmm.
And it was at that time that you had greater contact with government, presumably because of the Oakridge
Report.
Well, not
me, because I wasn't at LSE.
Ah,
But, well, the whole climate change. Government departments became much less the monasteries or nunneries which they had been in the past, and outside people were called in for a whole variety of purposes.
So what did happen to you then during the war? You didn't stay at LSE then?
No, I was away. When I say I was away from LSE during the war, I wasn't able to go to Cambridge, and therefore I was asked to resign from LSE. I was here all through the war as far as my base was concerned, but I was working first of all setting up one of the first Citizens Advice Bureau, and then I was with the then National Council of Girls Club, what later became the NAYC, until 1944, when I went to the Assistance Board to do a study of their welfare services for them. And then I went back to NSE in 1944.
Yes, well, then what you have been very short. Can you tell me something about setting up the first CAB? I mean, how did that all come about? Whose idea was that?
George Haynes.
Yes. And,
what's
the story behind
that? You know the background of the CABs being set up?
No.
A group of people, of whom George Haynes was one, and I think Ben Asprey, A-S-T-B-U-R-Y, then the General Secretary of the FWA, decided that there would be a lot of new regulations in wartime, and that people would need easy access to information about these, because they would affect their lives, and that therefore it was necessary to have easily accessible sources of information. And from that sprang the whole idea of Citizens Advice Bureau, which were to be staffed entirely by volunteers with a backup service. And one of the first ones, which I went to start in September 1939, was in Church Street, Kensington Church Street, for this part of the world. And of course volunteers were very easy to come by at that period, and we had a very good group of volunteers, and people began to stream in. For what I realized now